Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week, I'm joined by Nima Yassini, CEO at New Republic. Nima, welcome to Digital Transformation and Leadership.
Thanks, Daniel, for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. So before we start, would you be able to quickly introduce yourself and what it is you're doing?
Sure. So my name is Nima Yassini. I am a co-founder of a business called New Republic here in Australia, headed out of Sydney, Australia. We began our life as a user experience business, moved into experimentation 3 years into our 11-year journey, and have since really become the bedrock within our country around building cultures of experimentation within organizations that help them mobilize data and also make better design decisions through data and statistics.
What got you started on this journey? What was the kind of thing that made you want to set up your own business?
Oh, look, I never meant to set up my own business. Honestly, New Republic was a for lack of a better way to put it, a happy accident.
Okay.
I started the business because I came back from London. I was running JWT in London as the digital transformation lead, for lack of a better way to put it. And I came back home due to personal circumstances. And whilst I was looking for work, I was contracting jobs, and we kept winning business. And as a result, I ended up having to chat to an accountant who said, "You should incorporate," and then we created a company.
Okay.
So it was never meant to be a company. It's just the happy accident occurred, and you know, we formulated a company that seemed to have quite high demand and grow. And so that's how I came into this position. And then about 3 years into that journey, I met my business partner who came in, and you know, she literally restructured us and catapulted us for growth. I'm more of the product, and she's more of the business. So she's very, very smart at what she does.
Yeah. Do you find that's what you've got to do? You've got to have a partner there with complementary skill sets?
Look, I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to read a book called E-Myth.
I haven't.
Wonderful book, and it's all about the myth of entrepreneurism. And it talks about every organization has three people in it, should have three people in it, the technician, the manager, and the entrepreneur. And most organizations begin with a technician, much like myself. And, you know, technicians, what we're good at is we're really good at the product. We're really good at creating our widget. But when we start a business, we do everything but do what we're good at. You know, we become sales, we become marketing, we become finance, HR. And so I found through my experience that if you're a technician, you have two very simple decisions to make. One, don't start a business. Or two, find an entrepreneur and then over time find a manager. But find an entrepreneur. And, you know, my business partner she's an incredible business person. She's wonderful at that entrepreneurial spirit. You know, she came from fashion design and came into digital and then transformed this business. And interestingly, she runs the business by the numbers. You wouldn't expect that from someone from a creative industry. She was a fashion designer. And she always would tell me that, you know, when you design fashion, you need to design things that sell. So you have to look at the numbers. You have to see how many units are moving. You have to understand what's moving. You have to understand what of your sample that you've sent out into the world is actually moving faster than the other, and build on that. And that really, like, the way she thinks is very much about what we do with experimentation. You know, we put something into the world, we study the change in those variants, and then we pivot onto the winning variant and build on that. And it was so interesting that it didn't occur to me until, you know, a few months back when we were just talking about how she came into this and what a wonderful shop she's done. And so it really has taught me that if you're going to build a business, you've got to make sure you've got those three people in your business. Because if you don't, you know, as a technician, you'll end up doing what you're bad at rather than what you're good at.
Yeah. Or very quickly look to bring them into the company, I guess, once you reach a certain scale and you can afford to bring
them in. I think it's the realization.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the realization. I started thinking that I'm, you know, the entrepreneur, and I horribly found out 3 years into that journey that, wow, I'm actually good at the product. I'm really crap at these whole numbers and management and thing. And I can do it. I just don't love it. And she's very good at it. And I think anyone who's been in business long enough, you know, to stay in business for over 11 years, you've got to have done something right.
Yeah.
I've realized that, you know, you've got to find those people who fit those buckets, and, you know, they can, and you've got to be good at what you're good at and know that you're good at it and get out of the way of the people who are good at their area. And, you know, my business partner, luckily we met, she's good at that business side of it. And, you know, we've now got some good people around management to facilitate and help us as well. But I think if you're going to start a business, you need to have those three buckets in place.
Yeah. And sometimes founders and in the early days, you're very involved, aren't you, in the day to day. And as the business scales, you have to step away. How do you find, you know, running the machine as opposed to being in the machine? What do you do there to find that balance?
I mean, I like I said, you know, being the technician, I keep myself in the machine. That's where I'm good. You know, I understand the process. I know how to deliver it.
Yep.
I know how to position it, how to talk about it. And, you know, most importantly, I know how to train our team around it, which is the most important thing. You know, our job as technicians is to build other great technicians, to find people who are masters, to create people who become masters of their craft. And that's the role I think I play in the business. Now, that's not for every business. That's for our business. You know, Stacey, my business partner, she very much works on the business. She really focuses around what she's fantastic at, which is what I'm horrible at, is she's great at picking good people. She knows how to pick. I pick horrible people. All the stuff that we have, I don't pick anymore. Like, I literally go, Stace, if you think they're good, I can train them. Okay. And, you know, 8 times out of 10, she gets it right.
Yeah.
So for any of our staff listening at the moment, you're all 10 out of 10s by Apple.
You've done the hard part. You clearly have that self-awareness. You know what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing, which a lot of people miss, sadly, don't they? They keep doing the things they really shouldn't be doing.
So, yeah, it comes with age.
It does. It definitely does. I know where you're coming from. So the topic we're going to get into today is digital experimentation, which super interesting and really the core of the business, like you mentioned. And we've got 3 points we're going to unpack. So it'd be great if you could tour the listeners and me through the first point now, which is the new wave in digital experimentation.
Sure. So let's start with the concept of experimentation is not new. You know, so, and it's called by many names. Some people call it test and learn. Some people call it experimentation. There's a large body of people that call it CRO, conversion rate optimization.
Yeah.
And then you've got another group that will call it by its fundamental name is A/B testing. So it's a fundamental. It's been around for a long time, and it's been around in organizations like your, you know, Amazon's, Google's, Facebook's, eBay's, and so forth, right? It's a business norm in those organizations, and it's a business norm because if I asked you, when was the last time Facebook updated its website design? It like drastically updated its website. When was the last time Amazon completely changed its homepage and its complete website? You know, you see people go through these, what they call digital transformations, and they redo their whole website. When was the last time you saw any of these organizations do it? And in most cases, you're probably hard pressed to figure set a date to when they've done it. And if you're smart, you're probably going
with these kind of companies.
That's the thing. They don't. They keep pivoting and evolving, and they use data. And technically, what they're doing is experimentation. Now, if you're new to the field, let's unpack what the differences between them are. Right? There is one which is conversion rate optimization. Is for anyone who is focused on experimenting at a point at a conversion event occurs, so a purchase or a sign up or something, right? So that's how I frame conversion rate, because you're facilitating a conversion event to occur, and you're testing different ways in which that event could be more efficient in occurring, right? You got the other side, which is experimentation, where it's not just about conversion. It could be about a range of things. It could be, hey, if I should I have chat on this page, or shouldn't I have chat on this page? Now, might not be for conversion. It might be just for facilitation. It might be just because you're launching a new facet to the product, and you just want to see if that new facet presented in a certain way or displayed in a certain location or part of the journey has a better success rate than another. So in those areas, we call those, you know, test and learn or experimentation. Then the last part, the blunt part, is A/B testing. A/B testing is a method. It's one form of experimentation. So you run A versus B. But inside experimentation, you have other tools. You've got ABN, which is more than just B. You have multivariate testing, which is far more complex. Then you've got into behavioral personalization, cosmetic personalization. So you're going to all these different permutations. And what you're ultimately doing is two things. And there are two levers within most organizations that are grappling with digital. One lever is always a data-led lever. So we need to understand our customers better. We need more data, centralize our data, better understand our customers. And the other lever is the customer experience lever. So we need to deliver better customer experience to customers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about it, in every organization, both levers exist, but most companies will be pushing on one or the other. So there's organizations that are very much pushing on the data-led to create better customer experience. So we need to understand our customers to design better experiences. Mm-hmm. The other one is we need to design better experiences, and the data is important, but it's not fundamental, right?
Yeah.
So there's those two levers. Experimentation worked across those two things. Now, where there's an organization that's data-led, those organizations generally find it hard to collect data, generally find it hard to understand data and mobilize data. And what I mean by that is there are most large organizations have, you know, tons, terabytes and terabytes of data. But to use that data in a functional, practical way takes a long time, a lot of tech and a lot of people. So it becomes really difficult to use. So experimentation allows a company to run smaller tests, collect smaller samples of data and continuously pivot, which is exactly what Amazon, Google, eBay, Facebook, that's what they do. They use bite-sized data to make smaller data point decisions and continuously pivot. And then you've got the other side, which is the customer experience companies or organizations that are leaning on customer experience, CX, UX. They're using experimentation as a way of validating that the experience they're delivering actually will deliver the results they're looking for. So they're using it as a data point to confirm what they're creating isn't worse than what they have. If not, it's better than what they have. So what we do as a business and where we think the next frontier is organizations moving away from this productionization mindset. You know, we got into Agile because we're like, if you release more stuff, then hopefully someone likes, out of the 50 stuff you put in, somebody likes one of them, and then they buy more product, right?
Yeah.
And the problem with that is you know, you can't hire enough engineers for that mentality. You cannot be fast enough for that mentality. And it just, it fundamentally, it's driving a speed to market mentality, which, you know, we talk about, you know, MVP came out of this agile mentality. And the V, everyone is focused on viable when they really forget what's valuable for a customer is what gets them to buy. So, you know, this mentality of just put more product out there is really ridiculous. It's costly, it loses money, and it's definitely no guarantee. It's a spray and pray strategy, no different to traditional advertising. So what experimentation does, it reduces, and what it says is, let's test our hypotheses across these 50 things that we're thinking of putting out there. Let's find the ones that actually generate, like you could imagine Pareto's law here, 80-20. 20% of the stuff you release actually has 80% of the impact. So experimentation is, before we spend all that dev time doing it, let's go test these 50 things and let's find the 20 that actually has the most impact and implement those things. And then let's pivot, and then based on that, let's pivot onto the next thing. So it changes the way organizations work from being a throw as much stuff out as fast as possible to let's validate what's the most important stuff to work on and focus on those things.
Yeah, great breakdown there. You mentioned there's a few different ways to test, and you talked through that, and there's these two buckets. You've got the data lever and the CX lever. There's different ways you can get a pulse, isn't there, on what your customers are thinking and
100%.
How they'd respond. Are there any ways that you'd recommend companies or what they look at to actually just get more of a pulse on what they think of certain products and things before they go to market?
I think the point here is you know, we've just brought on a new client who's in the home fitness industry, which is a really interesting industry given COVID, right? Like, it was nowhere, and if you wanted fitness, you'd either run or go to the gym or something like that, right? But these kind of home help apps are becoming so much more popularized.
These Pelotons.
And it's really interesting.
These types of things.
What's that?
Pelotons. These are the bikes, aren't they? You can plug them in, you do a workout, but you're at home.
And also all these fitness instructors who've now created apps and meal plans, and they package these things into a monthly installment that help you achieve your weight loss goal or whatever your goal might be. It's a really interesting industry, and we've just started working with these guys. And it's not a category that we're, you know, familiar with. We're predominantly inside the finance, e-com, and also in the automotive category. So it was a new category to us. And what was interesting is that they showed the same hallmarks of every organization we walk into. And it is the mindset of, we need to do a lot of stuff to get cut through and, you know, drive our business.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't, we're making decisions based on gut feel. You know, and I've sat on a lot of boards. And the number one thing I always hear is people saying, I reckon, or I think, or I feel.
Yeah.
They don't actually know. They don't have the right data. So I think the one thing I would say is any organization that is thinking, guessing, or hinting, or interpreting one data point to confirm a certain bias should be looking at experimentation as a method of driving better decision making. Because that's all it is, an experiment. Is a way of using customer data, it's statistically valid data, to make a better business decision to allow you to pivot. Now, it doesn't have to be, we are going to transform the entire organization. It could be a small pivot. It could be like, if we display 5 price points versus 3 price points on our price point page, what would generate the best conversion rate for us?
Yeah.
So it could be something as small as that. But that insight, that input, like we had a client, a health fund client, and when you, I don't know if you've ever done health insurance in Australia, it's quite complex. There's just a lot of variables and, you know, your hospital cover, your extra cover. And they presented the customer with over 14 different options, right? Mm-hmm. We went in and said, maybe there's too much choice here. You know, the concept of paradox of choice.
Yeah.
We said, maybe there's too much choice. Why don't we reduce the choice? So we showed them 3 of the most popular and then gave them links to the remaining 11 products that they could also select from. And that test failed. It completely bombed. People liked the 14 option instead of the 3. Now, you think 14 is daunting, right? But it failed. And the interesting thing out of that was the behavior. What that was saying was customers want choice. They want choice. They don't want too little choice. They want more choice. Now, what we don't know is how much is too much choice. Is 14 too much? Is 3 too little? What's that number in between? And that allows us, that one test taught us that choice is important. Now it's how much is too much choice? We know how much is too little choice. 3 is too little. But is it 8? Is it 7? Now we've got to find that thing. So you can see just through that one example, that's starting to teach the business that choice is important for customers. That then has a replica. And now once we find how much choice, that has a repercussion back into the call center, how many choices they should present. It has a repercussion back to the product team. Don't create more than 11 products. People don't like it. But you can see that one test has repercussions across the business in many areas of the business.
And you mentioned the data there as well. There's this huge access to data pools. When you've been in, you sat on boards, there's still this kind of, oh, I think we should do this because my gut tells me we should do it, or I think rather than looking at things, which is a real common trap people fall into. But then even when sometimes the data is presented, what might often happen is as well, department heads or team members, maybe they're presenting a certain subset of data, so there's certain biases that become built in.
100% confirmation bias is one of the major flaws of, and this is what I'm saying to you, is that there's two big problems with data. A, there's too much data. So to actually go into it and you get in that, you know, anxiety of data analysis. And then the second part is confirmation bias. You want to prove yourself right. So you look for the data and choke it until you are right. Whereas when you do experimentation, you're basically putting into the world experiences that you think might work, and you're letting the statistics in, because it's bite-sized, it's small, it allows you to guide you towards what direction. And, you know, if you think about traditional science when it comes to experimentation, if you look at medication like COVID experimentation, it's about proving what you have is the best thing and then disproving it, which is what you're trying to do, is you're actually proving that what you're doing right now is the best thing possible, and then through the experiments you identify a better way. Right, rather than going, this is a better experience than what I have, I just need to prove it. It's actually trying to prove what you have is the right way to do it.
Okay. So prove what you have is the right way to do it, and then be trying to look as well if there's a better way you could be doing it.
Correct.
Rather than just confirming, oh, we're doing it the best way.
Correct. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to say, hey, well, I present, you know, 18 price points, and, you know, I want to prove that this is the right way by showing the minimum number is 3 price points. Okay. So what you're doing is proving what you're doing, and you're constantly challenging what you have to find a better way of doing it. Because if you suit as, you know, have you ever heard of the black swan, how they mm-hmm. found the yeah. first black swan? So it was the concept like, you know, all swans are white until you mm-hmm. find the one black swan.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's exactly yeah. the same thing. You're proving yeah. that all swans are white until you find that. And that's what we're doing in experimentation. And mm-hmm. the benefit into organizations is that you're using smaller bite-sized data to focus on what's important rather than doing 50 different things to hopefully find one thing that's important.
This is a big thing for companies that either aren't doing it or maybe are doing it, but maybe have some of these biases built in and are looking at the wrong things, which is very easy to do. So what's your recommendation to companies on how they do it in the right way and maybe how they build a culture of experimentation? Yeah.
So I think the first thing you got to realize is no company likes me, because what I'm doing is going, you know, all that time you spent on Agile, it's kind of a waste of time. Let's look at it another way. And so, you know, they've spent, you know, millions of dollars on training, restructuring teams, all this kind of stuff. And I'm coming in going, yeah, Agile's only one part of the puzzle. You haven't actually solved it. You need to have an experimentation mindset. So what I generally find is, what Agile does is allows us to understand the structure of around cross-functional teams, allows us to be faster in getting, because experimentation by its nature is about speed. Because the faster you learn, the faster you pivot, right? And 50% of everything you do is a waste of time, because, you know, a test has a 50-50 chance of winning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So building a culture of experimentation begins at the top. A lot of times when experimentation programs begin, it starts at the bottom. You know, one person in the digital team goes, hey, we should run A-B test. And they load a free tool and they run a test. And they're like, wow, that's interesting. And then they show their boss and the boss goes, that's interesting. And then they do another test. And then all of a sudden they're finding that these tests are helping them make better decisions. They're actually delivering results for them. And they're like, this is pretty cool. Let's keep doing this. Problem with that is because they're working bottom up, they're focusing on metrics that are cosmetic. Like no one in a board meeting ever sits there and goes, our bounce rate is 52%. You know, that's just not done. That's not in the boardroom.
Yeah.
They're talking about like market share. They're talking about new products that they need to bring to market, where they are with, you know, some of the issues that they're facing and trying to resolve. So what ends up happening is by the time this thing reaches the board, the board's looking at numbers that they don't care about. And so where good experimentation programs begin is when it goes from the top down.
Okay.
And it needs to meet in the middle. You need technicians who understand it, but you also need executives who understand that to truly create a program or a cultural change, you really need to focus on those things that matter to the business and drive those into experiments. So if it matters to the business to know a new product venture, and that's an experiment to run. If it matters to business to know, I mean, I've worked with a buy now, pay later company who really was questioning whether sign up is better than getting an app download. Because once you have the app, you can do a hell of a lot more stuff with it than getting you to sign up, than getting you to transact, right?
Okay.
And so they wanted to know, if we pivot into app downloads away from sign up, what's the ultimate P&L impact of that?
Okay.
And it was a massive P&L impact. Like within 2 weeks, we lost 30% of our year-on-date lead count.
Okay.
And so the business was like, this is not the way to do this. We've got to pivot back to what we have and rethink our strategy.
Okay.
And so that's a really good example of a top-down.
Was that done in a controlled way, that test? Or
correct.
Was it?
Okay. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Completely controlled. So we created outside of the current experience. We created our own unique experience. We funneled in a number of users into that through media. And then we studied users who got complete app download, you have to download the app to enjoy the experience, and users who were asked to sign up. And we looked at the impact on conversion. And what we found was that if we went down an app download, we'd lose 30% of leads. And we ran that over a 2 month period controlled. We only had 10% of audiences seeing it. That it allowed us to then extrapolate out to say, if we do something like that, we will easily by the end of the year be about 100-something percent down on total lead score, which then had a revenue impact because, you know, each one person spends X amount of dollars and so forth.
Yeah.
So that's a really good example of a business top-down decision that needed some quick data to allow them to pivot into what's the next thing we should do.
Yeah.
or what is that time frame for transition? Because they did need to transition. It was going to happen. They needed to move because there were competitors who are moving the category into that market. And so for them, they needed to understand the timings of how long this transition would occur and start to think around how, when someone signs up, can I get them into the app? So we moved away from let's sell everyone onto the app to let's bring customers on and then transfer them into the app.
Yeah. And it's, so then it's, well, changed. I mean, it leaves no doubt, does it? Because maybe down 100%. The line, if they hadn't done this test, they could be still umming and ahhing, thinking, oh, if we transitioned into the app downloads, maybe things would be better or
we'd
be running faster. Whereas now they've got that clarity, haven't they, that actually they've made correct. The right decision.
I mean, I know organizations, that I'm going to leave them unnamed, large e-commerce organizations who've gone through the traditional redesign and rebuild of their website, and then they launch it, and then they're 20% down on sales year on year for like 3 to 6 months, and then realize what a mistake it was, and then go back to their old site, and they can't pinpoint in the new design what it is that's causing it. And so, you know, this idea of like, let's just do things the traditional way when we've got so much technology that can facilitate quick, fast insights to pivot, that, you know, this old way of designing websites, these old ways of making business decisions, they really need to change. Organizations need to realize this. There are fast, quick ways to get data points to make better, accurate business decisions to move forward on.
Yeah. And it's just, not just about... You can just ask your existing customers, can't you, before you launch that site to say, what do you think of this? What can we optimize? Because a lot of the time as well, organizations, they put websites together because they think it's looked good or the CEO likes it. Rather than actually asking their customers, it's always the hippo,
you know, the CEO. And, you know, the biggest challenge with this category, if anyone listening is familiar with it, is that organizations like Optimizely, who, you know, massive fan of their technology, I love what they do. But, you know, they came out and said, you know, with the Obama campaign, we changed the color of a button and we increased our sales by X. And that's the problem, is most people typecast experimentation, A/B testing, CRO, whatever you want to call it, into like, let's change some button colors and we'll get an uplift. It's so much more than that. It is like I've shown you in three examples around product design, customer behavior understanding, business decision changes. Like there are so many permutations that has got nothing to do with the color of a button being green or red that it can be used for. And this is the problem, is organizations have either typecasted or they are so led by their gut and feelings or the way they want to choke the data, that, you know, they get in their own way to adopt a better way of actually growing their businesses.
Yeah. What's the long-term implications, do you think, if companies continue down this path of kind of just actually just feeling like they can use their own instinct to make decisions and they don't look outside for the data or listen to their customers?
Look, I hate sounding like, you know, a broken record or you've heard these examples in the past, but like, look at Kodak. Yep. You know, Netflix got laughed out of Blockbuster. You know, these are good examples of, you know, quick data points that help you make better decisions to pivot. And so I don't want to say, you know, it's death for the business, but ultimately, if you're not testing, if you're not learning, and your customers and the environment is changing and competitors are adopting this modus operandi, then ultimately, you will become irrelevant because you don't understand the changing environment around you and the impacts of some of the decisions you're making. And sometimes those kinds of losses, this organization I told you about, the buy now, pay later, those kinds of losses, if they run long enough, you can't turn around from that.
Someone will take you over. And you meant,
well, I mean, you'll just lose too much money and too much traction, and a competitor will just come in and take that market share. You know, those customers do want to buy. It's whether they buy from you or your competitor. And if you don't understand the business decision you've made, if you've got no data to back that, then you're ultimately going to fail.
Yeah. If the implications of making the wrong decision far outweigh the positives, right?
100%. And you don't know.
You've got to make sure you're
making
the right decision, don't you?
Correct. And the point is you don't know if it's the right or wrong decision. It's a test to allow you to discover the right direction to take. It literally is a way of pivoting into a and the problem is experimentation doesn't give you the answer. It just gets you closer to the right answer. That's all it's doing. It's constantly getting you closer to the right answer by using customers to give you that insight through their click behavior.
Yeah, fantastic. And you mentioned to get it right within the organization, it needs to come from the top down. So you're focusing on the metrics that matter, not from the bottom up. But then companies do need to meet in the middle to make sure that things are correct. Could you you go into a bit more detail on that in terms of when when it meets in the middle? What are some of the things you need to make sure you're doing so you do get it right?
So look, we have a we do a yearly report. It's called the Pulse Report. It's basically a study of the top experimentation programs in the country.
Okay.
And the really interesting thing that we get out of that is we study what great looks like to understand what are the problems that people face in this program. And there's two things. You have organizations who start from the bottom and come up, and because the metrics don't matter to the board, they don't release the funds to hire the people needed to run these types of program at scale, right? Then you have organizations where the executive level go, yes, we bought into this, but they don't haven't equipped and trained the people to be able to do this correctly. And so, or you get these people who kind of understand it, but don't really understand it in depth to be able to accelerate. And there are very large digital first organizations that I know of who they've got executive buy-in who are like, drive velocity. And then you've got the team underneath going, well, what do you want us to test? Like and they haven't got the framework and the structure. So you have this desire, but you haven't got the capability. Or the other way is you have the capability, but you don't have the desire. And so they've got to meet in the middle. You've got to make sure that you've got a team that's equipped, that understands how to run these programs and are structured for them. And then you've got to have executive buy-in to make sure that they are funding and fueling, and also that the program delivers back to the business the things that matter. You know, I always talk about metrics that matter rather than cosmetic metrics. It's got to deliver back to the metrics that matter to the business.
Vanity metrics. You don't want
vanity metrics. Nice one.
Does that, you mentioned the team's got to be well equipped, and at the top level as well, they've got to be pushing this. Is there anyone else in the company that needs to be that kind of internal champion or a team that pushes on experimentation and innovation?
Most companies begin in a centralized model. So they have a centralized team that works across, you know, either a singular team, like an online team. They support the online team. So you've got product managers in that online team. You've got engineers and so forth. And they've got this experimentation team that sits to the side that runs anything that's not BAU. So they go through and sweep and find ways of making the experience better, right? And then work with the product teams. That's a very normal structure, a centralized model. What you then find is as they evolve, these organizations, they move to a decentralized model. So you centralize your production of an experiment, but then ideas can come from anywhere in the organization. And that's a level of maturity the company's got, right? Then you go into more of a hybrid model where you have a centralized team whose job is not to run experiments, but to govern and police the programs that are running. Then each product unit will have its own dedicated team within the product team that run experiments. So a good example of an organization like that is Booking.com.
Okay.
So Booking.com, their centralized team don't run a single experiment. What they do is they police, are the right experiments being running? Are we running the right metrics? Are there any experiments that have clashed with others? Are the experiments we're running actually mattering to the business? Are we running the right types of experiments? And so their job is to make sure that the business as a whole is running the right types of programs. If you talk to the Booking.coms in that centralized team, they basically say, we need to be redundant over the next 3 to 5 years. The business doesn't need us, right? Or we've expanded into new areas of business that don't do experimentation, and we're teaching that those methodologies. The fundamental fact is, you know, you hear guys like Jeff Bezos talk about our business growth is based on the number of experiments we run every hour, every day, every week, every month, every year. And so this is, you can see that if you've got the guys at the top making this an ethos, it's how do you then mobilize the rest of the team to do it? Okay. And so it's how that mobilization occurs, where organizations like mine get involved in teaching teams, establishing these teams, setting up frameworks, working with the executive teams to understand the metrics that matter, that drive downwards. Help, like in a way, what we become the outsourced, like Booking.com centralized team. We begin as that. We then move into a decentralized, and then try to move into a hybrid, and then move out of the business and let the company keep running it. That's the way we work in helping instigate this driver of change.
Got it. And what companies, if they believe in it, they're driving through the change, they're mobilizing the teams, they've got the frameworks, they're putting in the metrics that matter. What's the kind of common, are there any common pitfalls or mistakes that you see companies still make, or maybe you've gone in and a company has failed, maybe that the first attempt. What are some of the things you normally see that you're able to help with?
Yeah, it's so common. We get involved a lot with this, like companies who've ran a program. I knew one company who had tried to do it 8 times and failed. And the failure generally comes to they want to adopt experimentation, but they're not willing to let go of the old ways of doing stuff. Okay. So they're still using their own confirmation bias. They're doing an experiment, but they're not really looking at the data to drive what's the right experiment. They're just basically going, I reckon, and then they run an experiment. So they're using it as a way of validating their own ego rather than what is the right thing for me to test and what is it that I'm trying. And there's challenges in that because, you know, the people who start these programs generally have a reason why they're starting it. And sometimes it's just because they want to confirm an idea.
Okay.
And the problem with that is at one point you run out of ideas. So what happens to your program then? Or there are people who don't agree with your ideas. So what do you do there? Do you just fight them? So it's how you set these programs up correctly for success. And that's what we find is there's a lot of organizing, you know, and a lot of the tech vendors will sell the tech and that the tech will do everything for you. And experimentation is one of those practices. It's not like that. And the way I always frame it is you can buy an F1 car, but that doesn't mean you're going to win the F1. You can buy the fastest F1 car, but it doesn't mean you're going to win. You need people who know how to drive that car. You need a technical team that will not lose you seconds in the pit stops. You know, there's a lot of things around this that have to come together as a unit for this to succeed. And so people buy the tool and turn it on and go, wow, we're an experimentation business now. It's all happened. It's amazing. Our revenue is going to go up by 300%, which, you know, it doesn't. It's the people that drive those tools that drive the change.
And if a company then company's doing it well, okay, they've got the experimentation running, they haven't fallen into some of these traps and they haven't just switched the technology on and thought that was gonna fix everything and fast track revenues. What do you think are some of the long term benefits to companies of experimentation?
I mean, look, I see a lot of our companies, the revenue that they generate out of it is massive. The customer insights, better understanding who their customers are, the behaviors. The impacts on product and product design and modifications to product, huge, huge value there. Retention, we've done a lot of work with clients around making sure that they retain their customers and they don't lose those customers. You know, because every business has, you know, trigger points in which an exit occurs. So understanding those exit points and understanding how to circumvent those exit points, that's a fantastic area for experimentation and the value that it can bring. And then fundamentally, I think, better decision making. You know, you're making better decisions at the executive levels for your business to make sure that you're not pivoting in the wrong direction that you can't turn back from. So I think there are so many examples of benefits for organizations that, you know, this is the next big wave that's coming through. And, you know, the funny thing is I work with a lot of companies who, and I know a lot of influencers in experimentation who, when you say to them, do you know what your competitors are doing? None of them have a clue. You know, we run these quarterly sessions to show people, our clients around what's happening in the category because we work with a lot of like category companies. Nobody knows. Like, it's the best kept secret or the worst kept secret in the world. Like, everyone's running a program or is thinking of running, but no one knows what anyone else is doing. It's just one of those categories that is just, it's kind of in this infancy as people are talking about it. Similar like the way SEO was. Yeah. You know, everyone used to talk about SEO and some people were doing SEO and everyone was saying how important Google is. And then, we are where we are today that you can go to a cafe and you can say to the cafe owner, do you know about SEO? And they'll know exactly what you're talking about. Experimentation is in that space right now. It's in those early fledgling space.
Okay. How long do you think it would take to catch up to say where SEO is now?
It's a really good question. I think the world's getting faster. So I think more organizations become aware of it. We're talking about 2 to 3 years. The category's going through consolidation. A lot of these tech companies are being merged. More and more companies are going towards, you know, we're going full cycle. We're going into these independent technologies that do amazing stuff being acquired and people creating these DX, like Adobe's got like its own, you know, data experience product set and, you know, EpiServe's got one now and they've bought through the acquisition of Optimizely and, you know, Cycle's got, everyone's got. So it's going through an evolution. I think as these become more centralized within the tech platforms of content management system, CRM, as they become centralized, I think you'll find that now the tech, when IT buys a piece of tech, mm-hmm. it's naturally wrapped into that tech. And okay. so organization will start understanding that I don't need to buy a separate piece of tech and prove to the business why yeah, I can just buy it as part of the centralized tech. And once that happens, I think it will slowly start to become, you know, you don't build a website without having a content management system. It mm-hmm. just doesn't happen. So it just becomes a part of business practice.
Yeah.
I think once that happens, and it's happening, I think you give it a good 5 years after that, it becomes business practice norms.
Interesting. Yeah, definitely. Everything's just getting quicker, isn't it? And
100%.
Tools are just bundled together these days without even thinking about it. Nima, I've really, really enjoyed talking through digital experimentation with you. Got a ton of notes here, so I'll be taking it back into my own company. Just to round off, would you be able to share one life or career lesson with the listeners?
Find yourself a really good entrepreneur and hire them immediately. That's a career lesson.
Okay.
You know, like Shakespeare said, to thy own self be true. You know,
okay.
Know what you're good at and don't pretend to be good at the things that you're not good at.
Yeah.
I think that's my major life lesson is just be true to yourself.
Yeah, your happiness levels go up much faster when you do that.
Stress, I find. Yeah. Stress levels come down, definitely.
They do, definitely.
Yeah, that's right.
And an interesting one about the entrepreneur.
There's another a book called Running a Service Business. And in there they talk about, you know, service-led businesses like your Accentures and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. They're built on always being inside the new frontiers. So entrepreneurs, by their definition, are good at discovering new frontiers. Mm-hmm. You know, the person that invented, let's say, Uber, well, it's a new frontier. They're sitting there going, why am I standing on the side of a road calling it? Why can't I just call one on my mobile and they come to me, right?
Yeah.
That's an entrepreneur. They don't need to know the category. They don't need to know the industry. All they need to know is that the way we're doing it is dumb. There could be a better way to do it. And so entrepreneurs are renowned for hiring managers and technicians to take care of the rest. I mean, if anybody here is listening to this, who would tell me that Richard Branson is not an entrepreneur? Who's going to tell me that Richard Branson is an amazing technician or an amazing manager? He's not.
Yeah.
He hires those people and he gets out of their way and lets them do it.
Still went to space.
That's right. And he still went to space. But he didn't build the rocket and he didn't plan the rocket and he didn't plan how they're going to. He hired those people around him. So he believed that there is an industry there. And so if you look at that, he's the entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing is finding those people who are good at it. The problem is technicians by their nature are very good at their category. So when they hire an entrepreneur, the worst thing that the thing that they can't do and it's really difficult is to listen to the entrepreneur.
Okay.
Because they know their category so well that they won't listen to those people who have a value that they don't understand. That makes sense?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying you've got to be true to yourself. You've got to understand that you're a really good technician, but you're not an entrepreneur. So you need to listen to the people around you who see things that you don't. And you've got to use experimentation as a way of reducing the risk of making the wrong decision.
Yeah. Well, that entrepreneur is tearing down the way in which you do things and what you've mastered, right? What you spent hours mastering. So that's very hard to hear.
I heard a really good analogy someone say to me as I told them the story. They're like, oh, it's like, and the way they said it is like imagine you're on one side of a landmass and there's a big chasm and then there's another landmass.
Mm-hmm.
The entrepreneur will just jump. They don't know how far this chasm is and they don't know what they're going to land on. They just jump.
Mm-hmm.
The manager just makes sure that when they jump, they've got something to land on. And then the technician makes sure that whatever they land on, it's the most technically perfect so that they don't break anything and they just keep going at the same velocity and speed.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a really nice way to put it because each one of those people has a role to play in how you move forward. And if you know business, there's a lot of perils in business and we're always having to jump. Mm-hmm. It's you need to find the crazy ballsy person who's willing to jump.
Mm.
You know, and I remember my business partner came in and said, we're going to stop doing all this stuff and we're going to start doing this stuff. And I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. It's completely. And I vividly remember like standing there screaming my head off going, you can't do this. This is the wrong thing to do. And then in my head going, she's right. We've got to do this.
Yeah.
And then just saying, fine, let's do it. And then working out a plan to do it in the least hurtful possible way. But yeah, and I think I think those two things that I said, really, if anyone's listening and it's of value to them, they tie together. You have to hire the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And as a technician, you have to be true to yourself that you are not good at spotting the new opportunity. You're just good at, when you get there, creating the best possible product for it.
Yeah, fantastic. Really, really like both of those, Nima. So how can people get in touch if they want to find out more?
So you check out our website. It's New Republic. The spelling's a bit weird. So it's NEWREPUBLIQUE. It's the French spelling.com. So come to our website, drop me an email at hello@newrepublic.com. But yeah, if anybody, and also if anyone's interested in the maturity index, the pulse report we talked about, the study that we do, it's on our website. You can download it for free. But yeah, besides that, you know, get in touch on LinkedIn. Look for me at Nima Yassini on LinkedIn. So hopefully we can connect and chat.
Awesome. And we'll throw some of those links into the show notes as well to make
it as
easy as possible for you.
Yeah.
Nima, thanks again for coming on Digital Transformation and Leadership and sharing all of your insights with the listeners. I've really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much for hosting.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review. Just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back again next week when we will again go behind the scenes with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.